Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
FM News Talk 97.1. On-demand audio.
Joining us now is Cassie Smedley, the National Press Secretary for the RNC. Cassie, it's great to talk to you again. I'm filling in for Annie Fry today.
I know. Great to talk to you during a weekday when there's daylight.
Good yes. I'm not keeping you up late on a Sunday. That's wonderful. So, Cassie, we had some breaking news yesterday afternoon. They have finally counted all the ballots they could possibly find in the state of Florida. The result did not change. The Republicans that won the first time won the second time. And the same thing happened in the state of Georgia. Cassie, isn't what Stacey Abrams is doing right now, isn't that just as dangerous? I mean, couldn't Hillary Clinton's quote from 2016 apply perfectly to her right now?
Oh, certainly, but it only applies when it's Republicans, right? Otherwise, Republicans are supposed to be gracious in defeat versus Democrats are supposed to fight tooth and nail to the nth degree. It's a fun double standard, and only the Clintons could deliver such a double standard so eloquently. But it's also interesting, Paige, that the Democrats are trying to push here, that they're saying, let's see how much we can get away with by questioning the will of the voters, questioning what is the known outcome. And if they're trying to set up that precedent for 2020, well, it worked then, will it work in the future? I'm glad that the will of the voters prevailed. I'm glad that we had all the right eyes and ears on the ground to ensure that every vote was counted and counted accurately, so that we know that the folks who are in these seats, whether that's the new governor from Georgia, Brian Kemp, or the new governor and senators from Florida, Ron DeSantis and Rick Scott, are all rightfully in their place representing the people who voted for him.
Yeah, Cassie, why is it that when Democrats lose, and the media facilitates this, they definitely are part and parcel of this problem as equal co-conspirators in this, they never want to talk about the fact that maybe it was their policies that the voters didn't like? I mean, Stacey Abrams pretty much literally said during the campaign that she was for the confiscation of firearms. And that's in a state like that's one thing you probably shouldn't say when you're running for statewide office in the state of Georgia or in Missouri or Tennessee or most other states in the union, except for, I don't know, maybe a couple of the New England ones, maybe California. But I know there's a lot of big Second Amendment people in California as well. But she pretty much said that in the worst possible place. And but yet she wants to blame it on racism. Why is it never their policies that get criticized?
Again, just a nice, convenient double standard that they get to enjoy. But what I think is interesting is that you've got all of these Democrats who are running for the praise and glory of the national media, of the national establishment, and forgetting what their folks in their own backyard really stand for and want from their elected officials. You know, hats off to Stacey Abrams and Gillum and these folks who were able to make these races close. All right, you ran a really good race. Mm-hmm. You got out there and did the best with what you had. That's great. That's a good, healthy democracy. But you also, if you don't win, it is because you did not connect with your voters. It is not about the national media. It's not about the establishment hanging out here in D.C. It's about who's at home and what they want. And to your point, that's what they missed. And that was the difference between win and loss here. And for them to try and blame it on anything else is, a disservice to their constituents or their would-be constituents, B, a disservice to the process, and C, going to be hard for them to learn from this process if they ever want to get out there and try it again.
Well, yeah, let's talk, Cassie, about two things that happened in this last election cycle, which the ink is barely dry on some of these results. Two things that you're not going to hear about through the national media that are definitely going to affect going forward. The first thing they don't want to talk about, and the president really, I thought, hammered Chris Wallace on this in his interview with him over the weekend, mm-hmm. That's the absolute ignoring of the historic accomplishment of the first term of a president winning seats in the U.S. Senate. I looked it up the other day, Cassie. This is the first time since 1875 that Florida has had two Republican U.S. senators. We fired Claire McCaskill here in the state of Missouri, also historic. That is monumental, isn't it? Number one, there's the victory, but it's also now what the president and the Senate can do together moving forward.
Right. I mean, people, whether we realize it or we forget it, an incumbent senator, I mean, the incumbent in fact is real in House and Senate anyway, but an incumbent senator has a 95% chance of getting reelected. 95% chance. Mm. That's a lot of chance.
That's remarkable.
Security.
Yeah.
I wish I had a 95% chance of keeping my job for the rest of my life. And so to ever take out an incumbent, that's a really big deal. To take out an incumbent being from the president's party during the election that no one's supposed to win anything from the president's party, bigger deal. And to take out, I don't mean to take out, but to beat them mm-hmm. and to give yourself an expanded majority in the Senate, to your point, that's a majority that can get some more things done, whether that's confirming more judges or getting more of the president's agenda done. And that's a majority that the House majority, that very slim majority in the House of Representatives, Democrat majority in the House of Representatives, has to work with.
Yeah, Mitch McConnell now, this cannot be understated, can it, that he now has some significant breathing room for all of the president's appointments, for cabinet-level positions, and most importantly, if another one, or dare I say maybe two, Supreme Court nominations come up, mm-hmm. Mitch McConnell's got a little breathing room. That's huge for the president's agenda going forward, isn't it?
Absolutely. And one person that I think is worth noting here, he not only picked up senators and senators who will be good allies, but do you know who's not there? Bob Corker from Tennessee, who was always
yes.
one of these holdouts who weren't sure where he was going to go. A Republican, but not really the president's Republican. And you know who replaced him? Marsha Blackburn,
yes.
who's a strong ally of the president. So not only does he have an expanded majority, he has an expanded majority of allies as well. So, yes, that relationship between the president and Mitch McConnell, I think, is going to be fruitful. And that's where people aren't going to talk about it enough. They're not going to give enough credit to it, and that's fine. They didn't give enough credit to it for the last 2 years when Mitch McConnell quietly, completely reshaped our judicial system.
Yeah, he's breaking records
yes.
Every day so, with his appointments. Yes,
right. So I think he's generally okay with it not being the headline news that it should be, because that doesn't stop him from making great progress and stop the president from working with him on that. So let's keep all the eyes on the House, where they're going to have increased divisions, because you've got those who were really only able to eke out their wins because they ran as moderates, whether that's anti-Pelosi moderates or those who are veterans and kind of hold the typical credentials of Republican candidates. They can't come in and start caucusing with the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortezes and the other far left socialists in the Democrat conference. So they're going to have some work cut out for them. And in the meantime, I think the Senate's just going to keep working on the will of the people and of the president.
Well, Cassie, you segued very nicely in the second thing I was going to ask you about. And that's the second thing that the national media and anybody on the left is completely ignoring is there is a real fight for the soul of the Democrat Party. And whether you want to call it a civil war or not, they really are having an identity crisis, aren't they? Because Speaker Pelosi 2.0, she comes in a very different era than back in 2006. And you do have all these new national Democratic darlings like Ocasio-Cortez. You know, Bernie Sanders wasn't really a big thing back then in the U.S. Senate. And they're all pulling the DNC one way. But like, as you mentioned, a lot of the reason that they won the House was they recruited and ran some very attractive, and I'm talking about personality and in stances attractive, and moderates in these suburban districts. So they're really a party in flux with itself, aren't they?
Absolutely. And as much as people want to say that some of these states that President Trump won in 2016 that went back to being blue in this midterm cycle, well, maybe so, although it's not surprising when you have a state like Wisconsin that never hadn't gone for a Republican president since 1984, now all of a sudden go back to electing some Democrats or reelecting Tammy Baldwin. That's not weird. But to your point, a lot of what these states did is they elected or reelected folks who came in with moderate platforms. Mm-hmm. They tried in primaries to put up the Bernie-backed candidates, and they didn't win time and time again. Bernie Sanders had a horrible primary season. Everybody, it seemed, that he went and supported did not emerge from their primaries. So now they've got this caucus of pragmatic Democrats who are going to be at odds with this Democrat Party, which seems to be catering more and more towards the leftist socialist gang. So it will be fun to watch, I think. But ultimately, and here is my true hope, it's a win-win situation for the president. I think you and I have talked about this before.
Mm-hmm.
Either the Democrats are going to let that far-left progressive wing prevail, and they're going to muddy up the process with baseless investigations or votes to abolish ICE. And that signals good prospects for the president's reelection and for Republicans to have a good night in 2020. Or the pragmatic, more moderate Democrats, or at least those who ran as more pragmatic, moderate Democrats, will prevail, and they'll have to work with that Republican majority in the Senate to get things passed that the president will sign so that they all have something to write home about, which means more of the president's agenda, which is ultimately the American people's agenda, will get passed, which also signals good news for the president down the road. But I am being pretty Pollyanna on this idea that it's a win-win scenario for Republicans.
Yes, National Press Secretary for the RNC, Cassie Smedley. Cassie, the way I've been kind of nutshelling the election for folks, you know, very quickly is I say, look, ultimately, I think blue states got bluer, red states got redder, but most of the major important swing states went in the president's column. And I'm talking about Florida and Ohio. Florida elected a brand new Republican governor, a brand new Republican U.S. senator, as I said, since 1875, you know, they haven't had two. Ohio elected a brand new Republican governor. It can't be understated, can it, Cassie, that as we head towards 2020, some of those electoral behemoths like Ohio and Florida seem to be more firmly in the president's camp.
I could not agree with you more. As much as I think the world should revolve around our shared home state of Missouri.
That's true.
The grand dames of politics are Florida and Ohio. And if you really look at it, you laid it out very nicely, but in Ohio in particular, not just with Mike DeWine as the new governor, but when you look down the ballot at some of those congressional races, those are those key seats. I think of Steve Chabot, who represents a key part of Cincinnati. He's always one of the most competitive seats in the country, and in fact has lost a seat before and then came back to win it again a couple years later. But the fact that he won during the supposed blue wave, that's really telling about where Ohio is and where some of these, and I would say mixed white and blue collar districts are. And Democrats and Republicans both should be looking at that. And so that signals, again, a good sign for the future for the president's reelection prospects, because you're absolutely right. Those states got redder.
Cassie, last question for you. What if you could give two, maybe three things that the president and the Republican Senate would want to work on the new Democratic House with? What do you think people should be looking for as we head into 2019?
Well, I think that it would behoove them to follow through with the idea of the Tax Cuts 2.0. That works for everybody. It's a good thing for everyone to write home about, and there seemed to be broad agreement on it for these folks who ran as moderate Democrats. Secondly, infrastructure.
Yes.
Another area where we can find broad agreement, and it's a place that is a priority for the federal government, so it makes sense for them to do it, and that's something that everybody can write home about. So I would start out definitely focusing on those ideas. But frankly speaking, work together on healthcare. We all agree Obamacare is broken, not working. That's a big step that no one likes to talk about, that you had Democrats that are now basically saying, yeah, we agree with you. This is a bad thing. So figure out a fix that actually works for people, because people need it. And I think there's real opportunity to get something good done.
Boy, Cassie, I couldn't agree with you more. Republicans, they do not need to run from that issue. I think they need to grasp hold of it, have a solution for it, because I think if you just ignore it, you get burned by it. So I couldn't agree with you more on that. Hey, Cassie, have a great Thanksgiving. Hope you get to spend some time here in the Heartland with family and friends over the next week or so and get a little R&R before we head off quickly into another busy season, won't we, in 2019.
Right, it just starts again. Yep, I'm heading back to Missouri tonight, and I just can't wait to get on that plane and get back. To talk with you first.
Congratulations to you. Travel safe, Cassie. We'll talk to you very soon. Be good.
Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. That was Cassie Smedley. She is the National Press Secretary for the RNC.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.